Strap yourself in and adjust your mirrors for maximum visibility. It's time for Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Good morning, Kirsten.
Good morning.
Now,
welcome.
We have a great Traveling Tunes this morning. We're doing Japanese jazz funk.
So you liked it? You liked what you heard?
Yeah, I think it's great. I don't know. I have quite a few. I don't know if it's necessarily like all Japanese musicians, but I have a bunch of, they're big fans of like jazz funk compilations in Japan, and I've over my lifetime, I've ended up with a few different CDs and LPs of like, you know how the Japanese records come in the sleeves with like the, you know, the special, you know, like the katakana and stuff down the side. I've got a few Japanese bits and pieces.
Oh, that's cool. So yeah, you probably already heard, because some of the ones we're playing today are all really big names. And one thing I learned, so they call it jazz fusion. I don't know if I knew this exactly before, that jazz fusion equals jazz plus anything. So jazz rock, jazz pop, jazz funk. And this genre emerged in the 70s. In Japan, and so you have other artists in the States like Herbie Hancock that are already starting to sort of cross into, you know, cross their jazz with stuff. And so the Japanese artists, you know, people who know the history of Japan, there's a big American presence there, obviously, since the 40s, but they'd had jazz and loved jazz all the way, you know, since the beginning of the century and followed it all along. But in the 70s, this music, this jazz fusion music, and these artists who are here today were so big in Japan. This was their big sort of musical moment, and it didn't much feature outside until, like what you're talking about, this is such a weird genre. Most of the material I found about it was really recent and on Reddit. It's like a discovery genre, you know, the genre you didn't know you needed. And so a whole bunch of people enjoying it now and finding it.
What are we going to start with?
All right, let's start with, oh man, they're also, one of the Reddits is opening up a world of listening. Okay, let's start with Jiro Inagaki's Breeze.
Okay, all right, here we go. Oh,
1975.
Get the right channel going.
It has a bit of an intro.
The thing is, it's also smooth and easy listening, isn't it, Kirsten?
Smooth, yeah. One thing said about it, light and cool ultimate groove. But this guy's really a big guy, and one of the other guys we're going to play today also worked on the album.
Now, obviously, there's
a sax player.
There's quite a few cultural and socio-political factors at play here, aren't there?
Yeah, okay, so now you're hearing your funk. Oh, here's another description. The groove is polished, glossy, and shining. A definitive masterpiece.
Okay, Kirsten, how would you say Japanese jazz funk artists would balance traditional Japanese musical aesthetics with the Western jazz and funk?
Now that's interesting, because I've read a lot of stuff that said it had Japanese elements, but I didn't know if I could hear it. But somebody suggested that, you know, they had particular songs where they would use, air quotes, traditional melodies, you know. So that's one element. There are other artists have tried to pop in Japanese instruments, like the koto, the shakuhachi. But somebody else, I like this one a lot, and it actually applies to the song, said, what's Japanese about it is the Zen vibe.
Yes!
And I'm like, oh, yes, that's cool. You know, yeah, because it's like you're blending Japanese, you know, with Western jazz, but the vibe of it, the sort of, I thought that was a really cool. And I think, you know, in its day, some people thought, you know, Japanese jazz, it's derivative, it's just an imitation. But like I said, there's been, sort of different discoveries of it, you know, outside in the West, and people really enjoying it for what it is. And like you were just saying before, it really does speak to the sort of political history, you know, of how things have gone down for Japan, you know, having the Americans there and stuff.
I mean, what do you know? Obviously, you touched on it, but how would you elaborate on the American military presence in Japan contributing to jazz funk?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, anyone being occupied, it's oppressive and, you know, not fun or positive, but it does mean there's just people there hanging out and they want to go to clubs and they bring their music, and so. Because apparently, even with the early introduction of jazz, like in the early 1900s, it was from Filipinos being there. So all these possibly, you know, unhappy political realities. But yeah, so just having, you know, they have African Americans there that, you know, some of the Japanese hadn't seen or met, you know, people like that before. And so just that sort of fascination and then introduction. But you can hear these artists. These aren't people that just picked it up because they liked it. They're like
pros.
Polished masters,
yeah.
Of their craft, yeah.
They're masters.
So they're like, yeah, Zen masters, yeah. So like they, you know, I couldn't find that much about the artists themselves, but I'm assuming possibly they, you know, grew up playing other instruments. Because yeah, you don't just go, oh, I love the sound and pick it up. These guys are, you know, and big bands as well. I mean, that was the thing too about the 70s is jazz had become a bit watered down, you know, sort of big bands and pop tunes. And it was sort of this nexus between remaining jazz and picking up funk and hip hop without losing its jazz as well. So this 1970s was a big nexus for jazz globally. And I feel, yeah, these guys sort of really capture it.
Now we also have, obviously, I think technology kind of must have played a big part in Japan for some of the innovations, because you've got the advent of synthesizers and drum machines, and we all know that Japan was pretty big on manufacturing electronics.
You're right. They're the icons. They're the originators. You know, all the synths, the Yamahas and the Casios and everything came from them. Now, I didn't hear that much. You know, I haven't read that much about it, but yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, they're beginning to broach, and I guess with jazz, because it's an older form, everyone wants to preserve it somehow but also stretch it, you know, so like it's not super synthy, but yeah, you know, you heard like the electric sort of wireless or piano on that one, you know, sort of broaching these items that yeah are actually iconically Japanese but without losing the jazzness, I guess, you know, sort of bringing that combo. But yeah, you're right, they're absolutely at the forefront of all sorts of musical great technology.
What's the next song?
Yeah, let's do Kiyoshi Sugimoto.
Oh, this
yeah,
song
boogie.
Is so great. This is so
1978, and he was a guitarist. Let's say yeah, you can hear a little synths and stuff.
This one has got all the funk. Yeah.
Yeah. He's considered a master of the era. And people, oh yeah, there you go. They call his music fusion, avant-garde jazz. Yeah. Well, that's where it gets its title, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Now I can't remember which of these albums are playing today. But some of them are released in colors. Gold, I think the next one was released in light purple, red, you know, the vinyls.
The production on all these is so great. It just sounds so clean.
Yeah, that's why it doesn't feel like just a sort of a flash in the pan, let me play with this genre. These guys really devoted themselves, and it was hugely popular in Japan. Like in the 70s, this was their disco, you know, this was their funk, you know, this is what they listened to. Oh, I heard the worst thing. I'm gonna spell it J-A-P-A-Z-Z, Japaz. I think that's awful. But anyway, I don't know who called it that. but a couple articles I read use that word nasty, awful. Oh, and another thing. Japan has the dedicated jazz cafes where you go in and listen to... Oh, that was a short track. Where you go in and listen to jazz. Apparently the, oh, no, it's coming back.
It's good.
Apparently
back
there's
in.
Like 600 of them. Oh, there we go. Yeah, 600 jazz cafes. It's a thing. And you just go in there and listen. And some of them, you're forbidden to talk. Because you just have to go and
vibe
listen
out
to jazz. I know. We should open one. Why don't we have a jazz cafe?
Yeah,
here?
We need one. Now, how's Japanese jazz funk been received and reinterpreted globally, particularly, you know, with the DJs and crate diggers in the West?
Well, yeah. Well, that's right. You're absolutely right. There has been then some sampling. So that was one of the other things that kind of brought it back. So like I said, the West kind of missed it in the 70s. There's a little sampling in the 80s. But even now, apparently, like, artists like Grimes have sampled it. So, like, you know, sample culture really, especially anything that was big on vinyl, and this was a vinyl genre. Yes, that sampling that brings it back, which I guess now has then facilitated this sort of online Reddit discourse of people saying, what is this? Or come find it. And then, of course, you've got to do the search, people trying to find the vinyl and stuff like that. But yeah, sampling culture has been a way of kind of, you know, sampling's problematic because some people thought, wow, that's terrible, that's copying or that's using other people's music. But it also has the positive of sort of keeping things alive or introducing it to new generations.
Were there particular regions or cities in Japan where this really was the thing?
I haven't heard anything about it. Definitely was hugely popular in the country. And as you mentioned before about technology, the other big thing that Japan does, video games. And so apparently a lot of the video games composers all got their start with this music. And apparently you can hear fragments of it in early, like, Super Mario and Nintendo. You know, it was naming tracks and naming things so they recognize them. But in any people who are into that, you'll hear, you know, little... It'll have a vibe of this sort of stuff sometimes. So yeah, this is very, very Japanese. Like, apparently, you know, this is just a huge core part of their culture of, you know, recent times. Although I read something else, some of the modern people, Westerners looking at it, they said it's music for dancing in the kitchen, which hopefully some of you are doing right now.
Yes. Now, I mean, what role do you know, have you come across much stuff which mentions like the role of record stores or radio stations or particular independent labels that played a part in cultivating this jazz funk scene in Japan?
No, but that's always a really good story. You're right. Now, the fact that they were released so fancy with those colored vinyl, I'm wondering, does that mean major or minor record labels? I'm not sure. Like, is it minor record labels that do it because they're creative or they can't afford it and it would... the only major record labels. Yeah, and so I don't know enough about the record labels in Japan. Even though I know some of the big major record labels like Sony and stuff were based in Japan, so there probably is a full story there.
This tune is such a ripper. Now, we should probably make our way over to our next track.
Yes.
Dr. Kirsten Zemke, which is...
Yeah, let's do that.
What's the next track we got?
Hiromasa Suzuki.
Is this the one called...
Straight Flash.
Okay, Straight Flash.
Now, Suzuki, big name, obviously, in motorcycles, but also in music. Big, huge music learning styles named after a Suzuki. Oh, yeah.
We've had a bunch of texts through. Someone said Jazzpanese. Someone else has said, I wish New Zealand had jazz listening bars. And
yeah, let's do it.
And someone said, did they have weed in 70s Japan? Because it sure sounds like it. I love this.
That's awesome. Well, you know, that's an interesting question because Japan's really strict. And so if there was there, it probably won't be written down anywhere. But, you know, because apparently this music, not this music, but any sort of jazz, was banned during World War II. But apparently, you know, there were people still, you know, playing it and learning it. But, you know, Japan's pretty. So this guy, he's a pianist, and he arranged the piece Breeze we played earlier. He calls his music electrified jazz fusion.
It feels very fusion, Kirsten. If I was like listening to this and someone was like, oh, check this out, I would go fusion. Fusion jazz.
Yeah, and someone else wrote, it's a fusion crossover masterpiece. And so in his music, well, you know, another stuff that was happening at the time, so in the 70s, you're getting funk, birth of hip-hop, electronic music, and prog rock. And part of prog rock was virtuosity, you know, not saying, you know, no, I'm not throwing together a band and just playing three chords. No, I'm actually a really, really top, top player. And so you can hear that in this as well. And jazz has always had that too. You know, like these just phenomenal, you know, artists.
Can you speak a little bit to the role of genre fluidity, particularly between jazz, funk, and fusion in these recordings? And how do you think this fluidity differs in Japan compared to, like, perhaps more rigid genre categorizations in Western markets?
Oh, that's a good question, because, I mean, genre, you know how a lot of artists will say, oh, I hate genre, I'm outside of it. Genre's not really there for the music. It's there to for the audience to find you. Like, you know, we like to think it's about, does it have this BPMs? Does it have this instrument? You know, does it use this sort of beat? But it's actually just to try to help audiences go, oh, I like that. Well, you know, you see even now with Spotify categories and hashtags, like, it's an important part. But so these guys, you know, they were just smushing stuff together that they liked and calling it jazz. And perhaps they did have a little more freedom because they weren't in the States with sort of some jazz masters that might have curbed them a little bit. But then this itself became its own genre. You know, so even though it's so, you know, genre full and genre influence of multiple, then itself now is a codified thing. But yeah, with fusion in the title, you know it's going to be already a mix of genre. But yeah, it's not funk, it's not synth, it's not prog, it's Japanese jazz fusion.
Apparently, we're returning to the text machine here, Kirsten. Apparently, Paul McCartney got busted for weed in Japan. So, no.
Oh,
no.
Yeah. Yeah, so sweet. I mean, if any of them did weed, we don't know about it.
Now, Kamuri Hi-Fi and Nami Bar in Auckland are both kind of based on Japanese listening jazz bars. Yeah, Kamuri Hi-Fi, I haven't actually not been into either of those bars. I need to. Apparently, Kamuri Hi-Fi is fantastic.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. There goes my business idea. But yeah. Anyway, that's why I have a job at uni. But yeah, it's fantastic that someone's thought it and doing it. And I hope they're doing well. And now, like, good ad for you. Everybody go.
any
this is a bit wild. This is a bit wild for drinking coffee.
Any parting words on Japanese jazz funk this morning, Dr. Kirsten Zemke?
I don't know. It makes me want to get back into vinyl. All you vinyl people out there are probably nodding going, yep. And being smug know-it-alls like they always are anyway. But so you vinyl heads, yeah, you guys had it right. It's a great space for finding music.
Yeah, so good. All right, mate. Hey, thank you so much, okay. Dr. Kirsten Zemke, for Travelling Tunes this morning. You have a great long weekend.
All right. Everybody else too. Bye.
We'll see you next week. Headlines right after this. Whoa!
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.